This is a replay of the Wednesday night, July 5th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
I'm Raleigh James, and we do have 3 hours to spend together. Plenty of things on my mind, but more to the point, I want to hear what's on yours. 888-876-5593. 8888-Raleigh. Ask and ye shall receive. I got an email from Rich, and he said, I knew Al Bielek. I said, call the show. So we will be meeting Rich in a moment here, but I've gotten some email saying, well, what happened with your radio station? All right, so yes, our FM and Globe, number one station in the county, normally choreographs the music part of the fireworks that the big mining company puts on. And about 15 minutes before the event was started last night, suddenly we're off the air. Now, of course, I'm sitting nowhere near it, and I'm talking to you. And in Chicago, which I got the better end of the deal there, that's for sure. But it turned out that we were indeed off the air. And clearly there was a power issue. Now, of course, that was somewhat frightening because I've got generators, big Generac hunking generators everywhere. And I really couldn't explain it. And then someone called John and said, your block's on fire. What? Well, yes, it wasn't our house. It wasn't the broadcast house, as we like to call it. It wasn't the house with the studios. But it turns out that the big fire had absolutely nothing to do. We have the world's worst power company there, APS. They are, truly. And apparently someone hit a pole. And so I can't tell you enough to convey how publicized this event is, the fireworks, and are choreographing it, and in the newspaper, and announcements, and this, and this, and this, right? Everybody knows, you know, you go to 101.9 and you hear the music choreographed to the fireworks, except you went there last night and you heard dead silence. And interestingly, like I say, about a quarter before, 15 minutes before it was supposed to start. And the upshot was, I thought, oh, God, I'm going to be driving the Globe to figure out what is wrong and all this. Well, it turns out about 15 minutes after the fireworks were over, the power came back, and so did the radio stations. So all's well there, except, as I say, we've got three or four generators that are big honking things, and only one of them failed. Well, it was the only one that absolutely had to work to get that that signal to people in their cars who were watching the fireworks. So I'll find out this weekend what's going on, but all seems to be well, and thanks to those of you who emailed with concern. So that's our deal. Now, it is interesting. I have been fascinated by Al Bielek ever since I heard of him. And I think the first time I heard of him was probably around 1990. It was before the Philadelphia Experiment book came out, that Charles Berlitz book, which I think was about 95. And it's back when Art Bell was on a radio station in Las Vegas, and it was a political talk show, but on Sunday nights, the Sunday night segment was called Dreamland. And he'd talk about things. And after a while, the Philadelphia Experiment came up, and then the subject of Al Bielek. And Al Bielek, to me, became bigger than life because the story went on and on and on. And you don't know for sure how much of it is fact, how much of it is fiction, how much of it did he believe, and on and on and on. But when Rich said, I knew him for years, I said, you're just the man I want to talk to. So, Rich, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hello, Rally.
I'm so glad you you let me know about this. Now, you met Al in 1969. Whoa. Now this is decades before he becomes public to the world's knowledge. In 1969, when you met him, did you know anything about the Philadelphia Experiment or Montauk?
No. Philadelphia Experiment, yes. That was something that Ivan Sanderson was interested in.
Right.
And Al was. I met Al at the Palmer House. Ivan was there. He's going to actually do a TV show on WGN.
Yeah.
About the, what they nicknamed that? The Minnesota Iceman.
Okay.
And so it was like a meet and greet, and Ivan invited me, and actually Rich Crowe, somebody probably knows Rich Crowe.
Uh-huh.
From Chicago. Anyway, and I met Al. And so at the time, we just were kind of hitting it off with things in common. I mean, nutrition. He was big into nutrition. Obviously, unexplained phenomena. Electronics, of course. He was an electronic engineer.
Wow.
That's for real.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we kind of exchanged numbers because there was no internet at the time.
Right.
And we kind of took it from there. He worked as a consulting engineer at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he came to work in Motorola in Chicago or in the suburbs there. And we got together, we'd had dinner sometime, and I had him over, stayed over at the house. And he was an encyclopedia.
Wow.
I mean, you could talk about just about anything. And he was the way you hear him on his lectures and all is the way he was. He was just that kind of monotone voice, very calm, very assured of what he was talking about. But at the time, I mean, Montauk was in the ether someplace.
Right. No, exactly. It was a point at the end of Long Island and you went fishing. That was about it. At what point did he bring up, or you, either way, either Montauk or the Philadelphia Experiment? When's the first time you got wind of that?
Sure. He called me one night and he said, did you ever see the movie, The Philadelphia Experiment? And I said, yeah. He says, well, take away all that romantic stuff and all in there. He says, that's jogging my memory. And he said, I think I was there.
Whoa.
And I, well, okay. Everything I'd read about the Philadelphia Experiment made sense, that it possibly could happen.
Yeah.
And he just said, yeah, I think I was there.
He would have been very young if he was indeed born in 1927, but still, it was plausible.
Yeah, he had been in the Navy.
Right.
That's where he got all his, some of his electronic training. Actually, his father was a mechanical engineer.
Uh-huh.
So I think he just, he had a background. He had his own, radio repair shop, Al did.
Mm-hmm. So here he's in the Navy, and of course, you probably reacted to the Philadelphia Experiment the same way I did. Plausible, but man, when they talked about the story of it reappearing with people who were embedded into the hull and all that, this was one of the more grisly things I'd ever heard.
Yes, and then it started coming that, he was there, and the whole time travel thing came up, and the soul switching. And then it got less and less, less and less believable to me.
Well, the soul switching, because now this is where you need the Venn diagram. You really do. because theoretically, he was only Al Bielek later, but before that, he had been Alexander Cameron or Edward Cameron, depending upon which week he told it. And he had a brother, Duncan Cameron. It was two of them who were allegedly on the Philadelphia Experiment.
Yes.
Do we know if Duncan Cameron existed?
I believe he did. Okay. I was in contact with someone who actually wanted to do a piece. He wanted to do a YouTube video on Al.
Yeah.
3-4 years ago. And so I contacted this guy and exchanged some of the information I had. And he sent me some links. And, I mean, we're jumping way ahead, but this Montauk thing got so crazy because the Montauk boys, as they called them, were being, after they had gone and done the whole project and it got shut down, and the reason that it got shut down, and this is something that I found on the internet, so, is that through time travel, they brought back a Sasquatch.
What?
Yes. This is on the internet.
All right.
And
so,
the Sasquatch destroyed everything at the Montauk. The time travel chair, all the equipment and everything.
Right. And the eggplant. Right. The eggplant did in Chicago.
Down.
Yes, of course they did. But yeah, supposedly the names you always hear were Duncan Cameron and Preston Nichols were the two. But allegedly, with a Montauk thing, there was supposedly an underground subway to Montauk from California.
Yes.
Just no.
Let me just say, you know, between when Montauk started and from the time I met Al, he was involved in a lot of different things. He just took interest. Sherman Skolnick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know that name. People mm-hmm. in Chicago would. The Citizen Committee to Clean Up the Courts.
Right.
And he got very involved with that. And he was in biofeedback. He was very involved with, and the Russian woodpecker,
mm-hmm.
the ELF thing. That very involved. He used to send me things all the time on that, and so there were a lot of things in between. But then when the Montauk thing started, and of course by then I had kind of had my own career going and was married, and so Al might call me and might send me some things. And I just was kind of, okay, I'd listen and ask a few questions, but I was like, I can't wrap my head around this.
No. Well, that's the thing, because supposedly he was Ed Cameron, and he was taken to Montauk in 1953 and brainwashed and regressed to Al Bielek as an infant. And it was a fascinating little tale that I never could really glom onto that. Although I wouldn't be surprised that all sorts of things happened at Montauk, but it does make you wonder. Apart from getting there underground by rail from Los Angeles, do you think he actually was at Montauk?
I believe he did. He did visit there.
We've all visited, take a cruise around, go fishing. But I wonder if he worked there.
Oh, he never talked about that.
Yeah.
I just know what I mean.
Yeah.
If you look at that antenna that supposedly was the transmitter that was, the time travel, it's a receiving antenna.
Yeah.
I mean, it was probably used, as they said, for tracking Soviet planes.
Right. Right.
But
it's just so fascinating. And of course, this was just so perfect for Art Bell, because they tell these stories in the middle of the night, and it was just fascinating to hear. The only time that, other than, the believability factor being there nonstop, was when he would talk about being with von Neumann at a point where von Neumann had already been like dead a decade. So did they bring him did they bring him back?
I don't know. I think he even mentioned Tesla.
Oh, yeah. I was going to get to that. Now, how about the Tesla part of this? And, now, I do remember, though, one of the programs I heard, and it's been many years, of course, but, when he was doing his time travel, that supposedly World War III was supposed to start in 2025. And I thought, wait a minute, that's coming up. So,
yeah, that's true.
That's a little close. That's not like 2137. That's a year and a half from now.
He never talked about any of that to
okay.
me.
Yeah, I sure wish he had, because I remember the one time I heard him on that show, he said it was 2025, but it was going to be a problem with Russia and China. And, you know, I'm looking at Ukraine right now and saying, damn, what if he was right? So
yeah.
Well, we'll find out soon enough, I guess.
Yes, yeah.
But that's...
But, yeah, there was, I mean, he was just... You know, he loved, he used to type everything on an old portable typewriter.
Uh-huh. Manual, no doubt.
Manual, absolutely, uh-huh. Yep. And he used to carry around a little tiny boom box with a big box of classical music, and he'd play that in his hotel room.
Well, right there, that's suspect. I mean, if it was R&B oldies, that'd be one thing.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess it could have been worse. It could have been opera, and then the people in the hotel would have thought he was murdering people. Oh, man.
But, you know, he said he traveled. He'd travel around. I'd hear from him. He says, I'm working at Siemens, or I'm working at Scientific Atlanta. Motorola was, I think, a longer contract for him.
And from what I understand, those were legitimate contracts. Now, I'm hoping that while he's there, you know, at Motorola working on God knows, he doesn't say, by the way, I was at the Montauk Project.
He would just say things like, you know, well, I met some people who are kind of, they're awake. They know, you know, they believe in UFOs and, you know, unexplained phenomena. But he wouldn't, that was before Montauk again. Because,
mm-hmm.
as they said, we're going back quite a few years before all came up.
He allegedly had access to the files at Los Alamos. And if you've ever been to Los Alamos, you know, nobody has access to those files. But be that as it may, the Bermuda Triangle came up. And, of course, we've all wondered about that.
Yes.
So.
And he, you know, he talked about, what did he bring up? He says, well, I met somebody who actually was in the Bermuda Triangle. I think his name was Dr. Ray Brown or Ray Brown. And he had a... Al saw him at a lecture, one of the Phoenix psychic seminar or psychic fair they have.
Okay.
I'm not sure. You know, this man talked about how he was diving. He wasn't, you know, they were diving, and all of a sudden, you know, he talked about the whole thing. The sky changes, and, you know, they go down, and he finds he shows a crystal ball with a pyramid in it that he claims he got down there diving.
Right, right, because he was in Atlantis or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we've all heard about the Bermuda Triangle because planes go missing, but I really have not heard about anybody who came back and said, yep, went right through it. So.
Yeah, that's guy, Dr. Ray Brown. I think his name is Dr. Ray Brown, but Ray Brown, yep.
Wow.
There's been articles that were published in some of, Argosy, True, all those magazines
right.
at the time.
Exactly.
Published, yep.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I got to read about that because I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. So that's just great. I can only imagine what it was like to know him. And also, if you met him in 1969, this is before anything that he did was publicized. And to have it, have you been a front row seat to watching this story evolve, that had to just be a mind blower.
It was. And I know, and he, you know, I mean, I've read that whole, you know, Al Bielek debunked site that,
yeah,
which, you know, that's fine, you know.
Well, right.
Because I can't say I believe it. So.
Right, either way. Hang on a minute. Don't go away, Rich.
Sure.
I found Dr. Ray Brown, so we'll find out what is going on in the world at large, and then a naturopath from Mesa, of course he's in Arizona. All this and more coming up on WGN Radio. Oh. And Adam just said, no, you can't go. You need to talk about the Sea Crane Company, and I'd love to. You know, if I'm talking about Al Bielek, you know that I'm a radio fan because, man, that was late at night on Art Bell. You'd hear him all the time and hear so much. And if you, like me, are a radio fan, you know that radios back in the day had incredible reception. And over the years, just terrible. And years ago, Bob Crane said, I can do better than this, and he did. The one commonality of all of Bob Crane's radios are they have excellent reception, AM, and FM. But over the years, not only that, many of them have really neat features, like the CC SkyWave SSB2 with single sideband. The ultimate companion emergency radio fits in the palm of your hand, weighs 8 ounces, great reception, AM, FM, and single sideband. The audio is sharp, and for its size, the audio is just terrific. But when you want to access important communications that your smartphone is not capable of getting, like emergency single sideband transmissions with broadcasts during a hurricane or after a major earthquake, this is where the hams are first talking about the event, where the first responders are probably not even on the scene. But in addition, when there's all hell is not breaking loose, you can just listen to your favorite AM or FM broadcast better. It's got a weather band and a weather alert, and like I say, access to ham radios all over the world. And the only way to get it is with a sideband radio. And so the CC SkyWave SSB2 is a true radio lover's travel radio. You can look at it at ccradio.com. Look at the CC SkyWave SSB2, ccradio.com. Or if you can't go online, best customer service will answer all your questions by phone. And that's 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. Yes, you can order by phone as well. But your best bet if you can go online is go to ccradio.com. You look at the CC SkyWave SSB2, and you tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
Those happy hours.
He recorded as a flip side on Monument in 1960, and he was about the fourth person to record it, actually. Don Gibson, of course, wrote it and had the first recording of it in late 57, and then Kitty Wells and Tommy Zhang, and then after Roy Orbison, Rex Allen and Warren Smith and Hank Laughlin, even Rick Nelson did it. But then, in April of 62, here comes Ray Charles. Yeah, the rest was history. That was the definitive version, but over 360 versions to date. So, Don could retire on that. 888-876-5593. We're talking to Rich in Wisconsin, who knew from 1969 on Al Bielek. And I find this just fascinating because if you've ever heard him on the air, you really got to wonder. So, okay, I found Dr. Ray Brown, 1970. He was a naturopath in Mesa. And allegedly, he was scuba diving with friends near the Bahamas. Now, by the way, the Bermuda Triangle, it's not like it's right off the shore. You're talking at least 20 miles from the edge of a submarine drop-off, you know, the tongue of the ocean. So it's kind of hard to believe that this guy, this tourist, is just kind of scuba diving here in the middle of the ocean. But apparently, there was a violent squall before the dive, and right there, oh, that sounds good. A lot of rain, a lot of lightning. Let's go in the water. You know, I mean, this is a little. He described the storm as being so violent they had to cling to mangroves on the island. Oh, yeah, let's get in that water. You know, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but okay. And during the dive, he gets separated from his companions, of course, because he can't have witnesses for this. And in trying to rejoin them, he sees a strange pyramid shape. This is great at 3 in the morning, by the way, against the aquamarine light. And I got a little problem with this, to say the least. But apparently he displayed the crystal he came back with, the one you had mentioned, at least half a dozen times. Then he was afraid that it would be confiscated by the U.S. government, so he did not disclose where he had put it. And then he later exhibited the crystal again, and each time he did, he was sensitive to strange phenomena. Yeah, I bet you he was. And so so it was that I don't know if Dr. Ray Brown is still with us. I haven't seen him advertising as a naturopath, but that strains credibility.
And Al believed it.
Every word.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's why I guess the Montauk thing was.
Well, what is fascinating about this is that, to pretty much everyone's knowledge, he did have engineering contracts with the likes of Motorola and Siemens.
Yes.
I can't imagine what he said in those interviews. You know. You know, because you don't normally.
And he also some of those jobs required at least secret clearance.
Right. I was about to get to that. So at some point, didn't somebody raise the specter of maybe he's crazy?
I don't know.
But I love it.
He was a great guy. He's a very serious guy. He said very knowledgeable. Drove a big old. I'm not good at cars, but he had a big old Chrysler Imperial.
Oh yeah, land yacht. Yeah.
And he had, I forget how many, a couple hundred thousand miles on that thing. He did most of his own work on that.
Well,
he was a scuba diver.
I'm surprised he wasn't down there with Dr. Brown. But you know, anybody who can get
he had a girl. Well, a diving buddy, as he called her, Betsy, that lived here in Chicago.
Oh, she does.
Betsy.
And she's now become a recluse, has she? But
I have no. I dropped him off once and met her, and he was, I think, going to stay there, and then I think she was going to take him to the airport to maybe go someplace else, or I don't remember. I just remember.
Right,
yeah, it was
right.
Betsy, and she was a tall redhead.
Yeah, someplace that planes don't go. But, you know, if he really got 200,000 miles out of a Chrysler land yacht, he's doing better than most of us.
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean.
Yeah, he actually came by my one time. He asked if there was some place that he could go to. He wanted to do a brake job on the thing. So I called up, asked my dad, hey, Dad, can he come over and use the garage?
Yeah.
And my dad was like, who's coming over? And I said, he didn't know him.
Right.
But he was concerned because he said, you know, you're bringing over an older man. Is there something wrong with you, son?
Oh, my God. Oh, no. Oh, my God. Oh, God. I can just imagine that. If he only knew, that would have been the least of his worries.
Oh, yeah. Well, you should have heard the time I had trying to convince my father that I'd rather stay at Ivan Sanderson's after I graduated from college, then come right back to Chicago and work, you know, repairing air conditioners or something for the summer.
Well, yeah. I can't understand how he had trouble with that one, but that's hilarious. Oh, man. Well, rest in peace, Al Bielek. There's never been another one quite like him.
That's right. You know, there was a false report of his death some years before he actually died. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I know. He died in 2011, didn't he?
He did, yes. He died in near Guadalajara.
Right. And what was he doing there?
He was at a facility, a care facility.
Oh.
What happened was I was trying to find him, and I got this notice for an email or something from somebody, you know, Al Bielek had a stroke and he died. They even gave the name of the funeral home.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so I called a funeral home up, and they said, what? No, never heard of the guy.
Right, exactly.
So then I found out that he'd been in Fort Myers and at a nursing facility there, and I think there were only two of them, so mm-hmm. I called them, and I said, do you have an Al Bielek there? They said, yeah. The nurse was nice. She said, oh, yeah, and I said, well, you know, I'm a friend of his. You know, if you tell him my name, maybe he'll want to talk to me. And she said, well, I'll have to see what kind of mood he's in.
Right, understandable.
And I know she took the phone, and I said, Al, there's a friend of yours. And he was cranky like a little old man.
Yeah.
And she said, it's not a good time to talk to him. She said, call back. So I did call back, and of course he'd had, I think, more than one stroke. I believe he had some problems with diabetes by then.
Oh.
And he had mysteriously, it's the best way I could put it, he had a niece who was taking care of him. Her name was Dee.
And was this in Florida at Fort Myers?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, and what she did is she had to get him out of that home because, you know, she didn't believe he was getting the right care, and she found this place in Mexico and took him there. And she would give him intravenous vitamin C.
Okay.
She told me that. And she found this facility that he lived there till, yeah, to 2011. And I would talk to him on occasion, and He was still sharp, and he asked me one time about Preston Nichols, and I said, I'll try to find him for you. And I contacted Preston, and he didn't want to have anything to do with it.
I'll bet.
I said, no, he's asked. I said, Al Beal, you know, he's in a bad way. He's asking about you, and I, you know, didn't care.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is.
That really is. Although, on the other hand, I can also understand that considering some of Al's stories, by that time, Preston was like, don't put me near this guy.
I think I should send you this link and not talk about it on the air because it's lengthy, but it's from a website called Stealth Skater, STEALTH. SKATER.com, and it's got documents. It talks about the Montauk Project.
Yeah.
And have you seen this?
Yes, yes,
oh,
yes.
Okay, with the whole sex thing.
Right, and the boys, and oh, God.
Yes.
And I have no idea about that. Well, you know, we've heard so much out of the CIA that almost that might be the most believable part of it, and that's really sad. That's really, yes. Really sad. But yeah, no, I found that site when I figured somebody had finally figured out cold fusion. Well, not exactly, but nonetheless, it was fun. So yeah, that's just wonderful. I can only imagine what it'd be like to know him. But yes, I just looked up, and in 2007 there were all these stories about that he died in Fort Myers in his niece or whatever his caretaker's home, and he hadn't. So I guess he made it all the way to Guadalajara before finally that was it.
Yeah, and I was in contact with Dee even after he died, and I lost contact with her because she said that he had two storage spaces, rentals.
Oh.
I think one in Texas and maybe Fort Myer or maybe in Arizona because he had, you know, had a home there at one time. Folks did, and I just said, "Oh, I said, Dee, you know it's in there. I mean, he's got all of his test equipment and probably devices and all kinds of things,
right?"
And I said, "You know, you've got to save that stuff." And I said, "I'll drive down there if you wanted me to," but I never, nothing came of it.
Ah.
So I don't know.
That's a real shame because now it's sounding more like Mill's Hole. You know, we never get to hear the end of it. Oh, man.
I mean, you know, radionics devices, I'm sure he had, and
classic stuff. Yeah, could have been a museum into itself.
Yep, plus all the documentation of things he probably had over the years.
Oh, yeah. What a shame. Maybe she did find it, and maybe that's why you've never heard from her. Saying a word about this. Yeah, I would almost believe that might be it. Rich, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for calling.
Oh, well, thank you for asking.
Oh, yeah, it's a fascinating story. I hope you'll call me again sometime.
I will.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Riley.
Appreciate it. All right.
Okay, good night.
Wow, Al Bielek. Yeah, I mean, stuff legends are made of. I'll get back to this Ray Brown guy. You know, the guy who went scuba diving alone in the Devil's Triangle and lived to tell about it, about the pyramid. Oh, yeah, of course. You know there's a pyramid. We'll get to Leah in Marcus Hook. There's room for you, too. And we've got another 2 hours to spend together after this, and I hope you'll call right here on WGN Radio. So that's Roy Orbison. That's the A side of what we played, I Can't Stop Loving You. And that was what they were trying for is a hit. Yeah, sounding more quintessentially Roy Orbison. That's for sure. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And Leah is in Marcus Hook. What's happening tonight, Leah?
Hi, Raleigh. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm listening, but I'm okay.
Oh, no. To the right or the left?
To the right, I think.
Okay. All right.
I went to the doctor, the diet doctor today.
And I
lost 15 pounds in June.
Wow.
So I'm 26 total now.
Uh-huh.
And that's huge.
And, of course, you were first on the 3 Ozempic in 1 day plan, but you've since changed that to weekly. And I take it you're not having any side effects.
Weekly. Well, yes, that's why I'm listing. I came home and I ate a soft taco and I got sick.
Oh, well, that's not as bad as it could be. But if you have signs of pancreatitis, all bets are off and stop. Just stop.
I don't know what's the signs of pancreatitis are.
You'd feel a hell of a pain almost in the center of your chest. It's unmistakable. And that can be a pretty nasty side effect. And so not like gallbladder that's usually on the side. This would be almost dead center. And it's, above the abdomen and kind of below your breastbone, and it's just there. It's unmistakable. I don't know how else to describe it, but if you get that, stop taking this now.
Just get sick in my bowels and vomiting and stuff.
yeah, I know, pleasant stuff like that. And you're sort of countering its effects because, of course, you know you're eating the things that you shouldn't be eating.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't know. Just a soft taco is okay usually, but it doesn't bother me. But this time it did.
Got a lot of oil in it.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That could absolutely. I mean, that could cause your gallbladder to go on a little trip too. It depends how they're
made. My gallbladder's out of here. Gallbladder has been gone for years.
Well, then even more important that you want to make sure you don't upset the pancreas.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Well, anyway, I'm very proud of myself for losing the weight.
Well, yes, absolutely. No matter how you do it, 26 pounds. Congratulations, Leah. Now, is there a goal?
How
many are you trying to lose total?
Well, I don't want to say.
Oh, okay. No, all right. So we're not in goal range yet.
No.
All right.
No.
Well, then keep
it's
it up
lot.
And stay
it's
away from
lot,
this time.
Though.
All right.
It's a lot. Well, I want to be thin by I want to be thin by my wedding, which is in 2025.
You can do that. That's a reasonable goal if you stick to it and you stay away from those tacos.
Yeah, I
all
do.
All right.
The other thing I wanted to ask you
stay right where you are, and we'll give advice next hour. Don't go anywhere. All right, we'll find out what's going on in the world at large right now on WGN Radio. Tra-la-la-la, Susie. Tra-la-la-la, Susie.
But you can't let Sue know. Are you afraid little Susie might turn her back on you? After school you miss her. How you long to kiss her. She's the loveliest, prettiest, sweetest little girl you ever knew. You get so discouraged if you just had courage. Oh, you would ask little Susie to go out on a date. I saw today when you pass her, then you ought to ask her. Yeah, yeah.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That was Chad's request from Louisville in 1964 on Rust, which was a subsidiary of Lori. Yeah, the Schwartz brothers. But Dean and Gene, that was Welton Young and Brenda Lee Jones, actually. So no Dean and no Gene in that, but that's who they were. They'd actually recorded separately beforehand. And in fact, Welton Young was a guitarist for the King Toppers in Dayton. And Brenda Lee Jones had a record under her own name. It didn't really matter. Their manager decided they were Dean and Gene. Why not? And first they were on Ember, did some things that sort of hit in New York, but not nationally. And then they wound up being signed to Rust. And at first that was no better. But then they hit with Tra-La-La Susie, which made it to the national top 40. And then Hey Dean, Hey Gene, which is actually even a bigger hit in some markets. And that pretty much was it. After that, by the way, they wrote it as far as Tra-La-La Susie and all that. But they decided in 64 they needed to update their sound. And they got some Boyce and Hart songs and some Chip Taylor songs. And nothing did anyway. I think that by 65 they said, no, I don't think so. But what was interesting, in addition to writing many of the songs they recorded, they also wrote The Majestic for Dion and some other things as well. And the later Brenda, I don't know what happened to Welton, but Brenda reemerged. She was Brenda Lee Melson for a while, had some interesting soul 45s, but not much. Neither are with us. Brenda passed away in about 2001, and Dean there passed away, I think 2017. I'm not sure, but I think that was when that was. But sadly, so in the meantime, they were riding on top of the world when they had Tra-La-La-La Susie. All right, so 888-876-5593. We're talking to Leah, and Leah said she needed some advice. Well, I'm your one-stop shopping place. I have no idea if my advice is good, but it's given quite freely. So what do you want to know, Leah?
I'm looking for a high-end professional cassette recorder, and I wanted to know if you have any advice for me on which one to get.
Well, see, I think you just ask for an oxymoron because I don't care for the format of cassettes.
Oh.
I would say you're not going to want to spend a whole lot of money. So eBay is going to be your best friend. There's a Tascam that looked pretty good that I remember.
What is it called?
Tascam, that TEC makes Tascam, T-A-S-C-A-M, the HS-20. I hear is pretty good. But, you know, if high-end stuff you want to look, you're looking at Nakamichi, things like that. You got a couple Sonys that might be all right. But the Nakamichis, the Tascams, and some of the Sony Pros will be okay. But these are expensive things. And, you know, why would you want the cassette technology? You know, this tape is moving at 1 7/8, for God's sakes. Why do you want this?
Because Albert, he's got this shaking problem because he has an injury in his neck, and he can't write anymore.
Okay.
And he's got nerve damage in his neck from a car accident, and it makes him shake uncontrollably.
Okay.
And so he can't write anymore. And, you know, when he's writing his songs, he likes to have a cassette player that he can record them on. He can't use his phone, the app. He has a recorder app on his phone, but he can't use it. It's too hard for him to use. And so he needs a cassette recorder. And I bought him one last year for Christmas, and he's already, you know, it's already gone. It's already beat. So he uses it a lot. So he needs a professional one that's going to really last.
It won't, probably. I think, like I say, there's a Tascam that's out. I think there's a Marantz, and that's funny because the Marantz today, somebody bought the name. It's not the same thing, but there's a Marantz they're selling as well. But if it were me, I'd probably be looking at the old models, but I just wouldn't be looking at that that format as far as that goes. So I'm not sure.
What should I be looking at, like a reel-to-reel or something?
Well, you know, I don't know that he's going to want to do that. And there again, you're going to have trouble finding the tape and finding the tape at a reasonable price and all that anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as DAT tapes, you know, the digital audio, I don't know. You know, I mean, the easiest thing to do is absolutely record it into a computer. By
yeah,
far.
Yeah, I know. We don't have one, though.
Well, but I mean, that's where I'd be looking. I'd figure out, you know, even a fairly cheap audio program that would capture it. And there's a lot of them. I'd probably be going in that direction. You know, there's a company out of Australia, NCH. They do WavePad, and WavePad is cheap. And they have MixPad if you want multiple tracks, and they're fairly easy to learn. But there's a learning curve on all of that, I understand. But for the most part, I would be looking more at that in some manner, you know, because you can get computers that'll do audio very cheaply because audio is not very bulky, doesn't take up, you know, a lot of space because there aren't as many bytes involved. It's not like you're trying to do high def video or anything like that. So you know, it doesn't have to be in a new computer. You can get. Oh, John came in here. What?
I always use a handheld digital recorder for all my audio production.
That's true. John does use a handheld digital recorder, and it is just one click. And he uses that, like, if we have a sponsor who wants to do a commercial or something and John has to go record them, he won't bring them into a studio here. He'll just say, I'll come to you, and he'll use usually a Sony handheld recorder, and they weren't terribly expensive.
About the size of a Snickers bar.
Yeah, right, it's about the size of a Snickers bar, or slightly smaller, actually. But thinner anyway. So yeah, the handheld digital recorders are pretty damn good. I just wouldn't be going for anything that was tape.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your advice.
Oh, sure.
I will look into this.
Sure.
And WavePad too.
Yeah, well, that's if you're going to do it online. You know, but John's right. If you don't want to take the learning curve to do things online, I like doing things online because you can edit them any way you want. And and that's a lot of fun, especially if you're talking about making music and you want to do it in multiple tracks. You know, you can pretty much, the world can be your oyster on that. But yeah. there is a slight learning curve. If you want no learning curve, then yeah, the handheld things are fine. But you're not going to be editing on them.
Yeah, we're both Luddites, so.
Well, but yeah, I know, but that can change when need be. You know, it depends how important it is to you to do it. Because it's not terribly hard. And believe me, people with less brains than you and Albert have done this, so you can too.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks for the good advice, both of you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Good luck to you.
Okay, thanks.
All right. So, yeah, and I hate it when I'll have a little program that I'll just love, and then it'll go out of production for one reason or another. And that's, you know, true with all things. In fact, I will still forever hold it against Adobe for screwing up and then dropping Go Live. Go Live was the best HTML generator, and that's what it was. It was not an HTML editor. It was an HTML generator, but it was good. And easy, I'll tell you what. And then when Adobe bought Macromedia and got Dreamweaver, first they screwed up Go Live, putting it into the Creative Suite. Oh, it was awful. But then they discontinued it entirely. And that's just terrible as far as I'm concerned. And so now when you want an HTML generator, you're going to go to something like Quick and Easy Web Builder because it's dirt cheap. And it'll work, but it ain't no Go Live. Go Live was just a dream. Yeah, I almost thought about, you know, getting an OS 8 or 9, a Tangerine Mac, and just to use the old Go Live. But I thought, nah. And I would do that for a while with programs. If a program would you know, go out of production, I'd manage to keep computers around that had the old system so I could use it forever. But ultimately, you know, I'd break down like I did eventually with WavePad and MixPad. So 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And I got a tabloid here somewhere too. That's right, slime from the checkout line. I did go to the grocery store today, so we can discuss that. And I did promise the short history on the condom if all else failed. So plenty of things to discuss right here on WGN Radio.
This is a 3-minute song to tell her that I love her, how wonderful we get along. The sweet sentiment is borderline slick, a lot of right and not much wrong. It's a little bit edgy, but softer than spaghetti, weak yet redundantly strong. It's a 3-minute positive, not too country up tempo love song. Yeah, it's a 3-minute positive, not too country up tempo love song. It's a way for me to tell her that I love her, but it can't be too long. There'll be no drinking, no cheating, no lying, no leaving. That stuff, it just don't belong in a 3-minute positive, not too country up tempo love song.
Here we go.
Every breath I draw, and how I can't live without her, and I could never doubt her, but she could never do no wrong. Well, it's the right amount of timing, the proper form of rhyming, the little guitar, then it's gone. It's a 3-minute positive, not too country up tempo love song.
I'm Robin James, and yes, I promised Stacey I would play an Alan Jackson record, and I admit it, I take him by the title, and I thought, well, 3 minutes, I might be so hopefully she liked it, and maybe you too. All right, so 888-876-5593. At this studio, I don't have it, and I'm not sure where it is in Globe, but I got to find it. Dick Biondi recorded an album in Nashville. I am not making this up. You'd think I did if you'd seen it in 1963, and Billy Sherrill was the engineer on it. Yeah, Ray Stevens played piano and Wayne Moss played guitar. Kenny Buttrey was the drummer. I am not making this up. And Dick Biondi's favorites, The Teenagers, and Teenage Humor and The Disc Jockey. I'll have to see if I know that I've got this album because the cover was priceless. And somewhere this is, but I've heard a lot of tributes to Dick, and nobody remembers this particular album, and I don't know, maybe that's for the best. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, and that's going to take us to John in Covington. What's up tonight, John?
Hey, Raleigh. I wanted to ask you a couple things. There's an artist, and he might have charted. My dad, like I tell you, my dad, the company he worked for in the 45s and jukeboxes and whatnot, they'd let him take them home after
Sure.
Okay. So we got one, and I always liked the record, and the artist seemed kind of wild. I can't really say as I ever pictured him and seen him with my own two eyes when they were good. But it's Roy Head, and the name of the record is Treat Her Right.
Yeah, Treat Her Right was a big hit, of course.
Really?
Of course. I mean, this is popular stuff. I can play that for you next. I've got it sitting here on a 45.
Okay.
There's nothing obscure about that. It's got hit all over it.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
About 65, 1965, maybe?
Mid-60s for sure. I'm trying to think what I have to do with that. It was on Backbeat. Let me think of it. Yeah, I think it was 65. Backbeat.
I think the record label is like a very dark orange.
Yeah, well, it's Backbeat. It's supposed to be. It's an orangey ready color, and it's supposed to. It got a couple yellow drumsticks on it. It's supposed to be like the Backbeat of drumming. And
I see
that was a Houston label, right on Wiley, 5208 Wiley. So of course you know that Don Robey's in this story somewhere.
Well, now of all things. Years ago, that Ralph Edwards had that show.
This Is Your Life.
Exactly. and they were doing a This Is Your Life of the good looking doctor on Marcus Welby, James Berwyn.
Okay.
And so Rosie Greer comes out and. Rosie Greer, who is like way older than James Brolin, but they become friends, and they say, "Oh well, we went down to Tennessee, the three of us, two of us, and we hung out with Roy Head, and we had a wonderful time." So I don't know, Roy Head was playing in a club down there or something. Anyway, him and Rosie Greer were good friends. I do know that.
All right. Well, I couldn't imagine that they would have Roy Head on This Is Your Life because everybody would be saying, who?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yes, yeah. It was James Brolin's. Anyway, and then there was another one. It was, I haven't heard this or anybody bring it up in years. And I think the artist's name was Jewel Aiken.
Oh, sure. Let me tell you about the birds and the bees and the flowers. And the
you got
and
it. Yeah, that's
anything
right.
Anything called love. Why don't you, yes, of course. Big hit.
And I think the record label is blue and white.
Yeah, Blue Cat.
Okay, all right. There's another one. It's Johnny Rivers does a great job on it when he's doing it live. Every Time I Have to Cry Some.
Every Day I Have to Cry Some.
Every Day. Yeah.
That actually was originally, Arthur Alexander wrote it, but the first hit was Steve Alamo.
Yeah, I've heard that version. I asked my assistant here for it. I won't say her name.
Okay.
I've heard that, and it's like, man, Johnny Rivers kills that one. I mean, Johnny Rivers is, to me, like, it's a Whiskey A Go-Go when he's doing the live stuff from 64 to 67. I mean, they are having a party every night, it seems to me.
Yeah, I'll give Johnny Ramosella, a lot of credit because he loved R&B. He wasn't necessarily the best at singing it, but he loved it. And the Birds and the Bees actually was on Era. As I thought about it, that was Lou Bedell and Herb Newman's label in Los Angeles, Era Records, The Birds and the Bees, yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Now let me ask you, and the reason I'm asking
hang on a minute. Don't go away. You got to ask me in a minute. Don't go away.
Okay.
And
all right.
We'll play some of the hits. We'll start to Johnny in Austin, all right, and Fran in Austin, and Mark in Aurora, and you two coming up on WGN Radio.
Hi, this is Dick Biondi, and this is my favorite sound. The sound, teenagers, and this is their favorite music. Those two sounds, rock and roll music, and teenagers for the past 9 years have occupied about 99% of this disc jockey's mind and heart and time. This album, a sort of a talking thank you note to all of the wonderful guys and gals that we've met and worked for, is dedicated 100% the singing, the little narrations, the poems, the music, to you, the teenagers of America, the most vibrant, most wonderful, and honest people we have ever had the pleasure of knowing or meeting. So, tell you what, let's sort of relax. You, wherever you might be, and us, right here on this little black shellac disc. And we'll have a ball. What say? Let's go.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, there it is. Dick Biondi's favorites, The Teenagers. Yes, it was. I've got the whole album. Maybe we'll play The Disc Jockey next. Hard to say. All right, but John in Covington had a question, I do believe. So what's up, John?
Well, what I'd like to know is shortly before I moved out of my mom and dad's house, and that was like 1982, well, I came across these needles for stereo.
Sure.
Okay, and no sooner than I moved out, I got a safety deposit box because of coin collections and whatnot. And I thought, well, we don't have a stereo anymore, but I came across this. I asked my dad, you care if I have these? It's a case of four needles, okay? And what I want to know is, are they compatible with just about any kind of stereo, or do you know?
Well, you know, it depends what you got there. And when you're talking about the stylus, the needle, I also want to know what cartridge it's in and what kind of a cartridge it has. So, if you're talking about the cheapo phonographs of the late 50s and early 60s, I mean, there you were seeing diamond or sapphire, have either side. Oh, my God. But the bottom line is that you need to know more than what the stylus is.
I see. And one of the reasons I ask, and believe me, I'm not looking for any sympathy at all, and I'm only going to say this one time, but I have stage 4 lung cancer, and my nieces and my nephews are kind of taking it hard, and they asked me if I would, the one niece, she goes to estate sales.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to buy a stereo if they can find one. And would I be interested in selling my records and albums? And it's like, you guys, I don't need the money. I'll give them to you. Let's put it this way, Raleigh. Uncle John pretty much gets spoiled these days.
Right.
Okay. So I'm just going to give them to them when they find one that they like. And, you know, maybe the needles will come in handy. But that's about it. I just, they said, well, you know, we're going to find one. And when we do, we're going to have a birthday party for you in October. And let's put it this way. Like I say, and believe me, I'm not going to mention this ever again. I'm not looking for sympathy. But Uncle John gets pretty much what he wants. Thanks a lot, Roy.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right, so 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. And, you know, some of those old little stereos just had some great sound to them, some of those tube units. Not necessarily were they reproducing the sound accurately, but just some of the warm pear-shaped tones. Man, I'll tell you what, there was a Voice of Music from 1962 that was a little portable stereo, and it had the best tone that I'd ever heard. And was it lifelike? Well, hell no, but it was so good. All right, well, I digress. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, and I thought of that because, you know, those were the ones where you turn the needle in one direction, it's diamond, you turn in the other one, it's sapphire, and all that. But most of the stuff you're going to get in terms of turntables is going to have a cartridge, and the cartridge will have a stylus. All right, so 888-876-5593. We got Johnny in Austin. What's happening tonight, Johnny?
A little less frantic tonight, right?
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, well, last night was a little workout for you.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm just so ticked that 15 minutes before the fireworks display, there goes the power, and then 15 minutes after it's over, it comes back. You'd say it was a conspiracy, except it's just a lousy power company.
Ah, there you go. Well, it came and went, and I think it'll be okay. But when you're talking about a power outage and fire, it's like, no.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, we had both close by, and this weekend I'll go and try to discover why that particular generator didn't kick on, because it should have.
You got to put on your engineering cap.
Well, you probably don't even have to do that. The first thing I'll do is look to see if there was any fuel in it.
Okay. Hey, a couple of things. Goodness, you were talking with John about Roy Head, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he was a friend of mine. He was a great guy. I didn't spend a lot of time with Roy, but I spent some time with him in 1969.
Okay.
After the Treat or Right days, and then I spent an afternoon with him back in about 1976. When he went in and started doing country music. He did some good country songs, too.
Yeah. No, and
one of his good country songs was called The Most Wanted Woman in Town.
Yeah, sadly, he left us a couple years ago, as you know. His band, The Traits, they were right from south of Austin, from San Marcos. And I know at first they were recording in San Antonio.
Yeah, well, he was a great guy, a lot of talent. He was one of these guys that... Man, he was on so many different labels, and you know, and well, in terms of having just a big musical career, it just never did seem to happen. But he sure gave it his best shot, and he did well. He did all right.
Well, he's in the Rockabilly Hall of Fame.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think it was like 2001 or whatever he got inducted into that. So yeah, he absolutely was. And
let me mention this to you real quick. A couple of months ago, I called in and mentioned a song called the Jack's Beer Boogie. And I did a little research this afternoon, and there was indeed a song. It was called the Jack's Beer Boogie, and it was done by Dave Bartholomew.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And now, I knew Bartholomew did good Jack's Boogie.
Yeah, well, this was called...
That's not the same thing? Good Jack's Boogie?
It's called Good Jack's Boogie.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah, Good Jack's Boogie. Yeah, that's Bartholomew.
And I'm looking on eBay right now, and I see two of these discs with that song on it. And I mentioned at the time, I thought this might be for radio stations and disc jockeys that did, like, a Jack's Beer show. Because in Houston, back in the 50s, there was a DJ named Dr. Daddy-O.
Oh, yeah, on the radio.
And he did an afternoon show on KTHT. It was not an R&B station at all, but they did block programming. And it was brought to you by Jack Spear. And on this particular song, I went and listened to it. And it does mention Daddy-O in there. So it could have been recorded for this disc jockey. I don't know, but it's a doggone good song. It's something that I'd like to hear if you have time to stick it on there.
I've got it. That's for sure. And it was interesting because that was, I think it was on Allied Records. And this is 49.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right, let's see if this is it.
Hey everybody, let's jump and dive. Stop acting dead, 'cause we're alive. And drink Jack beer.
Drink Jack beer.
Good Jack beer.
Good Jack beer.
Hello, mellow Jack, best beer in town. Man, don't be like that in the place, Rita. Grab a Jack and be a leader. And drink Jack beer.
Drink Jack beer.
Mellow Jack beer.
Mellow Jack beer.
Hello, mellow Jack, best beer in town.
Yeah, that's it, all right.
Yeah, that sounds like a radio station thing. It really does.
Well, I've only seen it on, you know, it was never on a commercial label. So you're probably right. It was Allied was, you know, more, it wasn't the kind of thing that was going to be releasing things to the public. So I assume that you're right about that. It was interesting because when Dave Bartholomew, who of course, you know, so voluminous, all that wonderful stuff from Fats Domino and so much more, but when he got back to New Orleans after the war, his band was the Dewdroppers, named after the Dewdrop Inn, which was, you know, one of the most notorious crossdresser bars ever. And, you know, that's where, Bobby Marchand, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, and all that, just terrific. But Don Roby, I think, owned that club or owned another one. But he was, Don Roby asked him to perform, and then he introduced him to Lou Chud of Imperial. And exactly why Don Roby didn't release it, I don't know. But they recorded that stuff at Cosmo Matassa's and released the early stuff on Deluxe. And so, but then Lou Chud just loved him and had him become Imperial's A&R guy in New Orleans. So, you know, that's where the Fats Domino stuff comes in and all that kind of stuff. So I would almost bet that Jack's Records, and again, that's what it said on it, and Allied was the company that, you know, that recorded the acetate, if you will. And, yeah, I would think that it probably was something that was only played on radio, because I think it says right on the record that you can't sell it.
Yeah, I know, and I bet you that's what that disc jockey in Houston used, because there was a line about Dr. Daddy-O in there, or Daddy-O or something like that.
Right.
But, there was another really good guy that I discovered from the Imperial days, also called Roy Brown.
Oh, yeah.
And I've ran into his music that I wasn't really aware of him until about, 10 years ago. And he did a song that I heard on a station in Latvia called Saturday Night.
Uh-huh.
Remember that one?
Yes, absolutely. That was Imperial. And
yeah.
He did a lot of things on Imperial, and a lot of the Fats Domino stuff, like Let the Four Winds Blow and all that, and then a lot of stuff like the Buddy Knox stuff, Party Doll, and I'm Sticking With You, and that kind of stuff, Jimmy Bowen, all that. So, yeah, he covered the landscape, to say the least. And
I'm gonna show my ignorance here. There was another R&B guy that I don't know anything about, but I've seen the name many times. His last name is Harris, and for the life of me, I don't know how to pronounce his first name.
Well, the first one that comes to mind is Peppermint Harris, and you know how to pronounce
No. Yeah. This is W-Y-N-O-N-I-E.
Oh, Wynonie. Wynonie.
Yes.
I know
nothing about him.
Of course. What do you mean you know? You can't tell me you know nothing about Wynonie Harris. I would have thought you knew everything.
I couldn't even pronounce his name.
Well, his big song was Good Rockin' Tonight. I heard the news, everybody good rockin' tonight. But that was sort of the tip of the iceberg for him. He was originally a dirty singer. And yeah, there were dirty lyrics, you know, the kind of double entendres and stuff like that. You know, I like my baby's pudding and lollipop mama, and well, you can figure it out. I won't go there. But he was the product of a 15-year-old unmarried mother. And he was, now what's really interesting is you'd say, oh man, well, this guy's from New Orleans, right? Try Omaha. All right, so sure enough, Omaha. But okay, and he was dating a little girl from Council Bluffs. I mean, your luck has turned bad when you're dating him from Council Bluffs. I'm sorry if anybody's living there, but that was the truth. And so they got married, and they were living in the projects in Omaha. And so that's where he was performing. And by now he was not young. He was born in 1915, so we're talking the 30s.
I'm looking at this.
And what helped him was the musician strike in 42, that whole thing. And he really, Lucky Millinder, he was in that group, and he was performing at the Apollo and all that kind of stuff. And then he was the resident guy at the Savoy in Harlem. And he started to make it. But he actually broke up with Millinder in San Antonio, and I think it was over money. And so anyway, he went on, and then, you know, was on Decca and did all sorts of stuff. And at the end of the war, he signed with Philo, and that was Leo and Eddie Mesner, the Mesners, oh my God. So, you know, that probably tells you all you need to know.
Well, he recorded for King also, didn't he?
Well, yeah, but as soon you're talking about all those independent label guys. And you know, the Mesners owned Aladdin, and they also owned some other stuff too. So yes, absolutely, why Wynonna Harris? But good news tonight, everybody knows that record. That's like an anthem. Oh,
didn't Elvis do it later?
Well, hell, I don't know. It sounds right. But
I think so. Somebody else did it later.
Well,
I know that.
Roy Brown had originally Good Rockin' Tonight, and then, like you were mentioning, and then Wynonna Harris, of course, and All She Wants to Do Is Rock. All She Wants to Do Is Rock, Rock. You know that, don't you? Or you should. And then he had, a country guy, Hank Penny, Bloodshot Eyes. He had a cover of Bloodshot Eyes. Yeah. And he was around. He worked for Moish Levy for a while. And John saying, shut up. All right, hang on. I'm going to shut up now. We'll be back in moments right here on WGN Radio.
Say, Wynonna, I was by your house last night, and guess what happened?
What happened, Mom?
Your grandma was playing the numbers.
Well, you just finding that out?
Well, what do you know?
We found out.
Yes, we did.
We found out.
Now we know.
We found out.
We found out that Grandma plays the numbers.
We found out.
Yes, we did.
We found out.
She couldn't keep it hid.
We found out.
Now we know that Grandma plays the numbers. Thanks about them every day. Bless her soul.
We found out.
Now we know that Grandma plays the number.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That was number 7 in 1949 on the R&B charts, and the flip side was number 10. I feel that old age coming on. That's Wynonna Harris. Yes. Any doubt how to pronounce his name was solved in that record since it was mentioned.
Oh God, that was really good. I was looking at some of his CDs, and I found one on Amazon. But on one of these artists, it said the hole in the CD was cut too small, and then some people couldn't get it to play. No, it says I like the CD, but most of these recordings, audio wise, are not nice / dull.
Yeah, I've got mine on vinyl.
You've got everything on vinyl. That's
amazing. Pretty much, yeah. But that was the old King stuff, yeah. Those King shellacks.
By the way, Gary and I were driving around. We did some errands today, and I think he's got Spotify, and I think it was Adele's version. I think it was Adele's singing "It's Not Unusual."
Oh, that's my favorite. That's a flip side, actually. It was a hit, but that's my favorite version of "It's Not Unusual." I love that.
Well, who did it first?
It's Not Unusual?
Adele's?
No, Tom Jones.
He did it first and the Dells did it later?
Yes, of course. This was a cover. And it was a flip side. And I've got the 45 and it's not in front of me, but it's a flip side. It's the flip side of Stay in My Corner when VJ re-released that in 65.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, yeah, but that's the best It's Not Unusual, I think.
Well, it just popped up today. We're driving down the street, and I said, what in the heck is this?
It's the flip side of Stay in My Corner.
Hey, I don't know where he picked it up from, but he added it to his Spotify playlist.
Well,
it's
on KJ with alarming regularity.
Did you like the Tom Jones at all?
Yeah, I liked the Tom Jones, but the Dells was the definitive version, I thought. I loved it.
Well, today was my first day to even hear it.
Really?
Yep.
You never turned your records over?
Well, I don't think I even had what was on the other side.
Stay in My Corner? No. Everybody had Stay in My Corner.
Well, if I did, you know, it's probably on a compilation or something.
Oh, not when it came out. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought the Dells version was just the best. So of course I'll have to.
Well, isn't that amazing? That's so funny because I didn't even know they did it, and then Gary looked at me and said, "Well, who did it first?" I said, "I got no clue."
Oh, Tom Jones.
I would have guessed the Dells.
No, yeah? Tom Jones. That was a cover. And yeah, that, oh gosh, Tom Jones did it in, Cher did it, and the Maurice Williams, the Zodiacs did it. And, I mean, this record was, but the first one was the Tom Jones, but there's like 170 versions of that. But the Dells, I guess the Dells were the second one, because Tom Jones did it right at the beginning of 65, like January. Mm-hmm. And then that Dells record came out around May.
I'll be doggone. Around
the same time.
Did it get radio play much at all?
No, nobody turned it over. They should have. It was a better record. Brenda Lee did it in September, if you're ready for that. So, and the Midnighters did it in October. Mel Carter did it in December of that same year. So there.
Wow. That's pretty amazing stuff there.
You have
I'll tell you, speak.
Hang a minute.
Go ahead.
Don't go away. We've ended the hour, and we'll pick it up right there. We'll continue talking to Johnny. We've got Mark. We've got Donald, Fran, Jerry, and James tonight on WGN Radio.
Every teenager in every city and town that has a radio station has a favorite disc jockey. We'd like to salute that disc jockey because he's a mighty important man. In fact, to our way of thinking, that disc jockey has probably got one of the greatest and most wonderful jobs in the whole wide world. What is a disc jockey? Well, he's the young fella that sits behind a mic. Mm-hmm. And boy, what a lot of responsibility that carries. For instance, he might be right there in the studio, or he could be on top of a flagpole, or sitting on top of a drive-in restaurant, playing special requests for the cars that drive in. He could be in a fallout shelter for 3 or 4 days at a time. But you gotta be sure of one thing, wherever that disc jockey is, and whatever he's doing, man, you gotta believe he's gotta be there. You know, a disc jockey is a pretty unusual type guy. To the people that make records, oh man, is he necessary. Yeah. A lot of people that make records say this guy is so difficult to deal with. Yeah. It's so hard to convince. Well, to the manager of the radio station, this jockey is, he's a guy. He's a number with this many listeners. And sometimes, if he's lucky, he's got a pretty good rating. His voice? Now, that's something to be sold. And if you're listening closely to your favorite disc jockey, you might be able to tell that when he goofs just one word in a commercial, oh, does he feel bad. Ooh. Because he knows he's going to hear about it. Like the boss is going to storm in and say, hey, buddy, one more time and, like, shape up or ship out. Now, this jockey has to be happy, bright, and as the saying goes, on all the time. Ever stop and think about it?
That no, let's not. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, that was Dick Biondi's favorite, says the album was called in 1963. And yeah, I'm not 100% surprised. Okay, I'm not surprised at all that none of the tributes included it, but I couldn't resist it. Not with Ray Stevens on piano and Billy Sherrill producing. So there it is. It's probably available on YouTube, I would almost bet. So 888-876-5593. Back to Johnny in Austin.
Oh, that was pretty interesting. I never heard that little clip before, but he kind of had this business figured out a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. No, he has a whole album of this. And like I say, did it
really?
He did it in Nashville in 63. And yeah, Billy Sherrill produced it. And it was Ray Stevens on piano and Wayne Moss on guitar and yeah, Kenny Buttrey on drums. It was, you know, it was a big session production.
You know, these disc jockeys back in those early days used to warn me, don't you get into this business, you'll be sorry.
Yeah, but what else would they have done? You know, they might say
that. Well, yeah. Yeah.
You get right down to it.
Tell me this real quick. I know you got calls holding, but the Platters, you said they were on federal.
Oh, yeah. Covers? Yeah, when I played Vuvi Abi and Maggie Doesn't Live Here Anymore and all that. Yeah.
I'm trying to find a CD of that. And,
there are. There absolutely are. Because I know.
There are?
Yes, there are. Because I know, not at this studio, but at the other one, I know I've got, actually at the third studio, which I don't go to anymore, I've got one. Yes, they absolutely do have the federal years for the Platters.
Yeah, I see a few, like the that federal label had a distinctive graphic look to it.
Yeah. The complete and, federal recordings. Here we are. This is not the one I have, but I'm looking at this, the complete federal recordings, and it is cheap. You can get it used for $9.29. All right, and let's see. Does it have Maggie Doesn't Live Here Anymore? It should, yes. Maggie Doesn't Work Here Anymore, I'm sorry. But and Vuvi Abi, yes, absolutely. It does.
Huh.
So
okay, I haven't seen that one, but
yeah.
At least I know what it's called and where to find it.
Right, and that's not the only one, I guarantee you, because I've got a different one, but you know, same songs.
Was that Sid Nathan that had that label, right?
Of course, right, in Cincinnati.
Have you heard that tape of that record that Sid Nathan made?
Yes, the one that, obviously you've heard it, so I can't tell you anything you don't know, but I'm trying to clean
it. I've got a copy of it. Hello, boys, it's about time that I put something like this out.
Yeah. Well,
and he starts talking about how the cow ate the cabbage.
There's a lot of it that is not arable, to say the least.
It was funny in parts. It really was. I didn't realize the guy, he really had a lot going on.
He was an interesting guy. He grew up a sick kid and in Cincinnati. And he had a little record store, too, before King and Federal. Sadly died in 68. And I remember at the Miami Heart Institute in Miami Beach, and remember that day. He formed that in 43, and it was country originally. And then
So the different labels did different things. Like
well,
you had King for
no. Believe me, country and western had some King stuff too. Yeah,
I know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, he had Sid's record shop, and what he was doing at Sid's record shop was selling used jukebox 45s and 78s originally. But and then he started King Records in 43, and his goal was to produce hillbilly records, in his own words. And
didn't he have Hawkshaw Hawkins?
Right, but then he discovered the demands of African American teens for the race records. He originally was pressing them in Louisville, but the plant was just so lousy that he opened up his own pressing plant in 44, and that was the pressing plant that was at 1540 Brewster in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And every time I'd go there, I'd, you know, drive by to pay homage to the shrine and all that kind of stuff. And then from King, he started Queen, and that did not last long. And then he had Deluxe and Federal.
Oh, yeah.
And Federal. So he had a lot of stuff on King, including, like you mentioned, Wynonie Harris or Lil Willie John or, you know, Hank.
Oh, yeah, Lil Willie John. Oh, yeah. Did you ever meet this man?
No. No, he died in prison, or I think, after killing somebody. So died in Walla Walla, Washington. So
I'm talking about Sid Nathan.
Oh yes, absolutely. I'm sorry, I thought you meant Lil Willie John. I'm like, no,
no,
never met.
I don't want to start a rumor.
God, no. Sid Nathan, yes, but you know. This is back in the days of the NARIS convention, the National Association of Record, and then later.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
I
that's,
remember.
So, yeah, that would, and then NARM. But, yeah, so, and he had, Ralph Bass was working for him at the time, I think. So, anyway, he had some great stuff, but he wound up putting what you heard, that wasn't a one-off. That there's one that gets really circulated, but he put out several of those. And some of them are absolutely cringeworthy, to say the least.
He kind of sounded like Stanley Ray a little bit.
I can see that. I absolutely can see it. Yeah.
No, he sounded like he wouldn't be the most easy guy to work for, but he had a good ear for music. I'll tell you that.
Well, sure, and you know he was hit pretty hard by the Paola scandals, like a lot of the independents were. So
interesting. Well, we've covered it all.
Yes, we have.
I know you got calls holding.
It is wonderful to talk to you. Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. We'll talk later.
Okay. Good. Goodbye. Okay, all right. So 888-876-5593. Little Willie John. No, I've never met Little Willie John. Although his sister Mabel. All right. So now Mark and Aurora has been hanging on for Dick Biondi for a long, long time. So hello, Mark.
Well, I have three recorder possibilities for Leah from Marcus Hook. One of them is the Nakamichi MR1 Professional Deck. That is about the finest machine you can get for professional recording if you don't want it to be portable. If you want it to be portable, there is a Sony model that I can't remember the model number, but it even has a peak reading meter in it, and it also has Dolby C, and the Nakamichi has Dolby C also.
Let's discuss that Nakamichi for a moment, because I'm aware of that machine, and that'll set her back used over $1,000.
Well, it depends. That may be so. I haven't priced it on eBay lately.
Yeah.
I used to own one of those.
Yeah, right now.
I used to own one of those things, and I lost it. I was so happy with the sound quality.
Yeah. Well, no, they're over $1,000 on eBay right now, and there's a handful of them.
And the thing is that the Sony portable will sound almost as good and will be about a third of the price. The disadvantage of the Sony portable is that it doesn't use solenoid controls. Mm-hmm. The Nakamichi does. And then the third machine that I wanted to mention is one that records on recordable CDs and SD cards, if she wants to go that route. And that's a Tascam machine. Again, I don't remember the model number, but it sounds awfully good.
And what I wonder, I mentioned Tascam. There are some Tascams that are good, but I wonder what he wants. You know, he's a musician, what he wants to do. Because if he wants to edit any of this stuff, I still say he's better recording it into a computer.
Probably so. And then, let me go on to the Dick Biondi story. I went to one of his toy drives. He used to do toy drives in the Fox Valley Mall.
I got to interrupt you again. Are you in the bathroom again?
No.
Because are you in the kitchen?
No.
Let me
bring my phone closer. Is that any better?
Yeah, maybe a little. But I was going to say, man, the echoing tells me that you're either in the subway station. I know that's wrong. So, all right.
No.
Very good.
I'm wearing my Apple earbuds. Maybe that's what you're doing.
I don't know what it is, but all I can tell you is a hollow, hollow, hollow. But that's all right. Carry on.
Well, he used to do these toy drives at the Fox Valley Mall, and I can vouch for the fact that he would be on the radio for 30 hours straight, and by the time he was finished, his voice was terribly hoarse.
Oh, yeah.
He eventually stopped doing that, but he did all of this for the sake of collecting toys for children.
Right.
And I came to one of those toy drives, and he lives up to the name Wild Italian, and he was short and wiry, and he was wearing a red jacket that day, so you couldn't help but spot him. But I brought a big stuffed bunny rabbit. It kept sitting in the hall in my building, and I thought, well, that would be a good thing to give to the toy drive, and whoever left it out here doesn't seem to be claiming it, so...
Right.
I brought it there, and, you know, as short and wiry as he was, the bunny almost dwarfed him. He said, this is the only time in my life that I'm ever going to get to carry a bunny.
There you go.
And so that was my donation to the toy drive, and that was one of Biondi's funny lines.
That's
and
great.
Boy, was he a warm-hearted guy, I tell you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a loss. It's a loss for radio, that's for sure.
Yeah, but he lived a good full life up to 90.
Oh, yeah. No, he lived a great life. No, as far as that goes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But for those of us left behind, there aren't any more Dick Biondis coming up the pike.
Even though he had a few run-ins with radio management.
Well, always. I mean, you know, like you said, he worked at 23 radio stations, you're fired from 23. But, you know, he was hot-headed, but you mentioned he was warm, and that was part of it. He was just genuine. So, yeah, he...
part of the same package.
Absolutely. And,
The few times that I called him at Oldies 104.3, he didn't act like he was a famous hotshot. He was... genuinely friendly and helpful, and just a cool guy.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who worked with him who didn't like him. Okay, sales managers maybe, but I mean in terms of other disc jockeys, I don't know anybody who.
Well, that tells you something.
Yeah.
The people above him in the hierarchy didn't always like him, but the people on his level or below him did like him.
Yes, absolutely. So, yes.
And that says something right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I hope we'll never forget. It's good there are all these, stories now this week. And I sure don't blame his family for holding it back a week. They absolutely deserve their privacy and all of that. So I think they did it just right. But,
Well, and it's too bad that I was born a little too late to hear him on WKBW.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can hear the air checks. But yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, good to talk to you, Mark. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And we'll get to Will in Georgia, and we got Fran in Austin, and Jerry in Rochester, and James on the South Side, and Donald in Midway, and room for you too, hopefully. But I don't remember if I did or not. So if I didn't, I will now. I'll say this is WGN Radio. Oh, maybe that's my turn. Nobody said anything, I don't think. But just in case it is, we'll hear some Roy Head.
Yeah, my man. All right.
Oh, great. So I'm playing two at once. Well, you know, you just can't hear enough Dick Biondi, can you? We'll play more Roy Head coming up later, I promise. But in the meantime, 888-876-5593. Will called back from Georgia. So, okay, Will.
Hi, Raleigh.
Yeah.
I see you got through last night fairly well.
Well, yeah.
In spite of everything.
Yeah, the fallout will be hitting for a while, you know, sponsors and that kind of stuff, but I'll worry about that some other night.
Right, sure enough. I recalled about D. Clark. I'm sure he had numerous hits.
Yeah.
And one was Rain Keeps Falling from...
Raindrops. Raindrops was the biggest record he ever had.
Was that the flip side of Hey Little Girl?
No, 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 no. That was absolutely on its own, but he never had a bigger hit than that. That was such a crossover hit and just huge for him. And a good record, no doubt about it, but it wasn't any Hey Little Girl.
Right, right. And as you recall, I mentioned last night, today was the day I entered the U.S. Army.
Yes.
I was sworn in 62 years ago at 4 p.m., so I'm sort of still reliving it.
Sure. Now,
and,
did you volunteer or were you drafted?
I volunteered fresh out of high school, 8 days after graduating.
All right.
And then
so
I went to college later.
When you volunteered after you got sworn in, how long was it before you said to yourself, "What the hell have I done?"
The next morning.
Yeah. Hang on a minute.
Next morning. 4 a.m.
Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are, Will. I want to hear more about that, and we'll hear Roy Head without Dick Biondi coming up on WGN Radio.
Yeah, my man. All right. I want to tell you a story every man ought to know. If you want a little loving, you gotta start real slow. She's gonna love you tonight now, if you just treat her right now. Oh, squeeze her real gentle, gotta make her feel good. Tell her that you love her like you know you should.
WGN Radio. I'm Molly James. There he is, Roy Head. You betcha. On Backbeat. Kind of a medley of his hit, though a number of other things are great too. But Roy Head and the Traits, 1965, got to number two on the R&B charts and number two on the pop charts that week. All right, so we're talking to Will in Georgia. Sorry for the interruption. Go ahead, Will.
Okay. I was in basic training at one end of the World War II barracks in 1961, mm-hmm. and somebody liked to play the radio really loud at the far end anytime we were back shining our brass and boots and so forth. And two songs that I really remember that got me through it all was Who Put the Bop in the Bop Shabop Shabop?
Yeah, Barry Mann. That might have been Barry Mann.
Manfred Mann? Or?
No, Barry Mann. Barry Mann.
Barry
Mann.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, Goodbye, Cruel World.
Yes, James Darren. Yes, James Darren. Yeah.
And so well spoken.
Yes.
I'm off to join the circus.
Right. Gonna be a broken-hearted clown.
Well, that's how I ended up. But wow. Then later on, college at Iowa, and then my first job was in Baltimore. I believe you spent a number of years or some time in Baltimore.
Oh, hey, Baltimore was a great radio market. So where were you working?
Crawford and Company.
Oh, okay.
Insurance adjusters.
All right, all right.
Two years, and then I was transferred back to Washington, D.C., where I was hired from, and 31 years in Arlington, Virginia.
Oh, wow.
In real estate.
Oh, wow, okay.
Now, I met Christy. She's 82, I'm 80. Uh-huh. We were in our mid-30s when we met,
uh-huh.
And she had met Joe Williams one time.
Oh, okay.
In downtown D.C.
All right.
He told her she looked like Leslie Gore.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah. Good-looking gal. Yep.
Good.
And Joe Williams. Oh, she was very excited about that.
Yeah,
and,
we're talking about the Joe Williams who sang with Count Basie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
He was. I think the place was the Cellar Door or something. Yeah.
He was a he was a Georgia boy too. He was born in Cordele.
Uh huh.
Although now, he grew up in Chicago, but yes.
I'm not a Georgia boy originally. We decided 20 years ago, at 60, to retire to Savannah.
Uh huh.
And we were there 10 years, but an awful lot of crime, so we ended up here in Western Georgia. But I grew up in Schenectady.
Oh, okay.
WPTR.
Were you there for the Juan Pfeiffero caper? You might have been in the service then. I don't know. But this was the best prank that WPTR ever pulled on WTRY. It was absolutely the best, and it was a deal where they created this character, Wonderful Juan Pfeiffero, and he was supposedly this seer from Bolivia who was going to be appearing at the Crosstown Motor Inn or something. But the deal was all the other radio stations had to they bought a month-long schedule, And in order to get paid for a month's worth of ads, they had to run the half-hour remote of Wonderful Juan. And so they built this guy up. They hired a publicist, Art Moger, to build Wonderful Juan up in all these stations, including TRY Bit. And for a month, they're saying that Wonderful Juan Fifero, is coming to Albany. Well, on the night of the remote, out steps this guy whose real name was Dale Kemmerer. But anyway, and he said, "You all think I'm a mystic, but I'm Wonderful Juan, 1540 WPTR. Well, at that point, every other station went away from the remote, and PTR got a month worth of free commercials for Wonderful Juan.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that all happened while I was away.
Oh, it was just classic. Yeah, Duncan Mounsey was WPTR's general manager, and he was just clever as all get out.
Mm-hmm. They were a powerful station.
Oh, sure.
And then I remember, I guess it was before I ended up graduating high school. That's when the payola back in the 50s and so forth, I think, that was going on.
Sure, sure. Well, remember, payola was legal from the standpoint of the disc jockeys. As long as they reported the income, there was nothing illegal about it. It was illegal for the licensee to take money, but not for the disc jockeys. So it was a very interesting time.
Uh-huh. One last thing. Another favorite of mine from the from those late high school days, different genre of music, more lullabies, was Tommy Edwards.
Oh, Tommy Edwards was wonderful. And I love, of course, It's All in the Game, which he first recorded in 52, but that remake in 58 on MGM was just so good. And Morningside of the Mountain, he was so wonderful. But unfortunately, he was a hardcore drunk, and he was very hard to work with. And then, sadly, he was killed in a car accident in 1970.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but, man, he was great.
The other great one there, of course, D. Clark, he ended up with succumbing to the bottle, too.
Well, a lot of people, unfortunately.
In North Georgia, by the way. Yeah, I think towards, staying in a motel for a while and just dwindled down to nothing.
Yeah. I think he died at the Lone Oaks Motel in Toccoa.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
North of Atlanta.
His last concert was with Jim Gilstrap, who did Swing Your Daddy, and he did that in Anderson, South Carolina, right before he had died. Very, very sad. The actual death was Smyrna. You're right, December 7th, 1990. Very sad. He was only 52.
Uh-huh. Right. Both of those gentlemen were just superstars, in their own right.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
And just so burned out in the way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately true. And there's so much of it, because most of these people were not businessmen, and very few of them got the royalties they were due, and there were no shortage of people to take advantage of them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, one last thing in international now. So once I was overseas, I listened to Radio Luxembourg.
Oh, of course.
Boy, they played great music.
Of course. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course they did. Well, great.
So, I'm a radio man through and through.
Well, I hope you're going to call me again.
Absolutely.
All right.
I definitely want to get in on the fun and games on Monday night trivia.
I'll look forward to hearing from you Monday night.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, so.
Raleigh.
Appreciate
bye-bye.
It. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
To join the circus, gonna be a broken-hearted clown. Paint my face with a good-for-nothing smile, 'cause a mean, fickle woman turned my whole world upside down.
farewell to love. I'm off to join the circus. Gotta find a way to hide my tears. Bet I'll have them rolling in the aisle, and I'll forget that woman if it takes 100 years. Right up and take a look at a fool. He has got a heart as stubborn as a mule. Come on, everybody, he is good for a laugh. And no one could tell his heart is broken in half. Well, the joke's on me. I'm off to join the circus. Oh, Mr. Barnum, save a place for me. Shoot me out of a cannon, I don't care. I'll tell the world that woman, wherever she may be, that mean, fickle woman made a crying clown out of me.
Pay attention to the calliope.
Shoot me out.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. It's not a calliope, it's the gal who wrote the song. Absolutely. They couldn't come up with the right sound, so she just did it. Gloria Shane was her name. And James Darren did that. It was a big hit for him in Culpix in 1961. So that was when they were getting anybody who was good-looking and on TV to record a record, whether they wanted to or not. And, yeah, that was a big hit for Culpix. So 888-876-5593. Now, I see Mark and Aurora. I think that we finished talking to Mark, but I'm not sure, so I better find out. We did finish talking to you, didn't we? Yes, I think he's gone. All right. I would have felt terrible if I said, hold on, we'll be right back, and then he never heard from us again. All right, we didn't want that. So we've got an entire night tomorrow night, 3 big hours from 10 to 1. So if you're not getting in tonight, well, there's plenty of room to get in tomorrow night. But Fran is in Austin. Hello, Fran. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, no problem. Well, I was going to talk a little bit about Dick Biondi. I met him when he was working at KRLA, and he did an appearance at the Foundation for the Junior Blind. I got to meet a lot of the DJs from KHJ and KRLA there, so it was kind of cool. But I was so nervous because I really liked him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was meeting him. I'm only about maybe 10 years old. And you know, so I'm really nervous, and I'm trying to talk to him, and I kept, because I have a habit sometimes when I get nervous, I get the giggles.
Okay.
And so I got a case of the giggles, and I'm trying to talk to him, and I said, I love this, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you like to laugh, don't you? And I said, oh, yeah, you know. And finally I calmed down. He you know, put me at ease and was very kind about it. And, you know, he said, what are some of your, you know, he asked me some of my favorite songs and that sort of thing. And just got me talking a little bit. And I'll never forget it because I got his autograph. I wish I still had it. But he said, to the pretty girl with the beautiful smile.
Wow. Wow, that's
and great. It said, and he said, just keep laughing.
Yeah, well, that's great. I love it.
And I still, you know, I still remember exactly what it says: "Pretty girl with a beautiful smile, keep laughing."
All right. Yeah. Well, he was at KRLA. He had a son, and I never heard anything in the obits. I haven't seen anything about that. But the son married a gal who worked at KRLA, Penny Biondi. And she wound up working there into the 80s, and they didn't last because it was the saddest thing. On her wedding night, they got a flat tire on the freeway, and she got out of the car and was hit by a car, and it dislocated her. Yes, it dislocated her hip, and she was never able to walk again, not without a very severe limp. And the marriage stayed a while, but yeah, that was her wedding night when that happened.
Oh my God! Yeah. Oh, that's terrible.
But yeah, she was at KRLA for years. Penny Biondi was her name, and I often wondered what happened to Dick's son. And then when I saw the obits, I didn't see anything about a son, so I don't know.
Huh.
Yeah.
But I just remember, I wish I could bottle his energy. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, there are a lot of high energy jocks at that time. I didn't like a lot of those.
Right.
I didn't like the Motor Mouths and the, you know, people like that. But, because it wasn't just fast patter, it was good. You know?
Well, it was genuine. You know, like with
B.
Mitchell
genuine,
Reed.
It was good.
No,
he
yeah,
really seemed
exactly.
to genuinely enjoy what he was doing.
Yeah.
He really seemed to genuinely like the people that called him, the callers.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember one time I called and requested a song and I got the name of it wrong. And he was just very nice a bit about it. You know, he said, oh, no, that's, whatever it was. I can't even remember now.
Yeah.
And, oh, thank you. I said, but
yeah.
He was, and a lot of the DJs weren't nice to the littler kids.
Right.
You know, they were nice to the teenagers, but the littler kids
right.
Yeah, get out of here.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, that was the scourge of their existence, of course. Yeah, but no, he took the time. He was a good guy.
Yeah. In fact, I used to, because I sounded older than I was, so when I would call radio stations, and they'd say, oh, what high school do you go to? And I would, tell them one that in the area I lived in.
Right.
You know?
Of course.
Why not? They didn't know.
Right.
You know. And, I hear my name from such and such high.
Yeah.
But I never, I never felt that I had to do that talking to him. I mean, he was very nice to the kids as well, as well as the teenagers, because after all, we're future teenagers.
Well, and he that radio station at that point was so against all odds because they didn't have a license. They had lost the license, and they were being managed by the Oak Knoll Foundation, which is a bunch of gray-haired ladies in Pasadena. And on top of that, here comes KHJ, with all the promotion of Boss Radio. And it was hard. It was very hard for KRLA. And, they were the benefactors of KFWB shooting themselves in the foot when KFWB made fun of the Beatles. Not a good thing to do. And
right, not a good thing.
Yeah, that.
They had some good people. I mean, they had him. I love Dave Hullabaloo.
Oh, the Hullabaloo. He was phenomenal. And I'll tell you what, later when he was on KMPC at night doing that Desperate and Dateless show before the other people.
Oh, I heard that. Oh, my God.
He was so good. He could manage 6 phone calls at once. I mean, I was just in awe because I'd always heard Dave and I knew what he could do as a top 40 jock. But when he did this talk show, it was just incredible. And I thought the world of Dave Hull. But he was another guy who was emotional and had his own temper. I mean, in some ways he was a lot like Biondi. He was not going to be management's favorite person, but I loved Dave Hull absolutely. And I miss him
because they cared about what they were doing.
Yes. And I miss him. I do. So yeah. But, it's funny because everybody loved Boss Radio. And while I thought the world of Steele, I really did. He was a true showman. And Morgan was great. He could read the grocery list and it sound great over record intro. But other than that, I was not a Boss Radio fan. I liked KRLA. I liked all the nonsense and everything else. That was my station. Much to my chagrin since I lived with Bill Drake. But nonetheless, I liked KRLA. Yeah.
Yeah, I listened to KHJ. I'd go back, flip. KGFJ, KRLA.
Yeah.
KHJ, KRLA, KHJ.
Oh, yeah. And then, then in the 70s, that little KWOW in Pomona. I loved that little station, the Wickstrom family. When they played 15 deep into Barbara Lewis, I said, it's my station. So.
Oh, I don't think I heard that one.
Yeah, 1500 AM KWOW.
I must have left LA by then.
Yeah, it was early 70s, that they got that
station. Oh, okay,
station.
I was gone by then, although I did go back.
Yeah,
summer,
you would have had to know it. It's not like they had any advertising, and I don't know if they were licensed to West Covina or what, but they were just great.
And KBLA, like that.
Well, of course, yeah, that's where, of course, they got the dreaded Humble Harv, although I will say that Humble Harv was the only guy I know who could turn the word Motown into a verb. So...
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Never was a big Humble Harv fan, but
yeah, Homicide, Killer Miller, and all that, of course, yes. And,
but anyway, other than that, I just found out I've got a kidney stone.
Oh no! Is it big?
Apparently so.
Oh, God.
But the weird part about it is, okay, I've been having lower abdominal pain for a while, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I had a kidney surgery many years ago, and so I was kind of afraid that that, you know, that kind of stuff was coming back, because I almost died from that. And so I go to the emergency room because I'm having so much pain I can barely get off the toilet, you know, and it's no fun. But I thought it was because I have a lot of problems with constipation and things like that. So I thought that's what it was. Well, they took x-rays of me in the ER because Gary is insisting that I go to the ER. So he took me to the ER, and they x-rayed me and everything. Not a word about a kidney stone.
Oh, my God. This is terrible. You've ended the show, and I want to hear the end of this story. So call me tomorrow night.
Okay. I'll call tomorrow night.
Yeah,
early.
We can talk about shockwaves. So maybe that's the way they'll go with this. All right. Looking forward to it.
Okay,
thanks.
Good. Okay, good.
All right. So apologies to Jerry and to James and to Donald. We got tomorrow night, 21 hours. Call early. You'll be first. Well, first, second, and third. After Fran, fourth. All right. Soon. Until then, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air. John for screaming your calls. You especially for calling makes it so easy for me to do. So I just love every one of you. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.